Support for The Common comes from the law firm of Davis Malm. Whether you're a private business, a public company, a municipality, a nonprofit, or in-house counsel, their business attorneys help achieve your short and long-term goals. DavisMalm.com, DavisMalm.com. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. Today's business leaders are saying that sustainability and diversity metrics are key to the way they do business, but what does that look like in practice? Stick around until the end of this episode to hear more.
Hey, Daryl C. Murphy here with a quick heads up about today's episode. After we recorded this, state housing officials announced that they are launching a 90-day effort to reduce the number of vacancies in state public housing by the end of the year. The announcement comes after today's guest, WBUR Investigations correspondent Todd Wallach, helped report that more than 2,000 state public housing units had been vacant, some for years. It's a wild story, so keep listening to hear more about it. Okay, on with the show.
WBUR Podcasts, Boston.
I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and you're listening to The Common. WBUR Investigations correspondent Todd Wallach, welcome to The Common, your first time.
My first time. I've been waiting to talk to you about some stories, so I'm really excited to be here.
Well, you have a hell of a story for us today. Because, Todd, we have you here because you just published this investigation into the state's public housing system with WBUR and ProPublica. Shout out to them. Tell us what you found.
Yes, the headline shocked me, and it shocked a lot of people. We found out that a lot of state-subsidized public housing is sitting empty. Even though we're in the midst of a housing crisis, even though shelters are full, the state's spending millions of dollars putting people up in hotels. Meanwhile, there are nearly 2,300 state-funded public apartments that are unoccupied, many for months and months or years.
Okay, I have a lot of questions about that, of course. But I want to take a step back and set the table by having you explain what the Massachusetts state public housing system is like. How does that system work?
Absolutely. And it's unusual. Now, there are lots of forms of affordable housing and help for people who need housing. There's both federal and state vouchers. Other states and Massachusetts have federal public housing. There are private developments, often with affordable units set aside. But Massachusetts is unusual in that we also have this huge state public housing system run by government that's meant to be affordable, where people pay less than a third of their income for rent. In fact, just four states have state public funded housing, and we have more than all three other states put together.
Okay, so how is it possible that there are nearly 2,300 units of this state public housing vacant while we're in the middle of a housing crisis? How does that happen?
One of the reasons is the state 4 years ago changed the system for the wait list for how people sign up. It used to be people would go to 230 local housing authorities across the state and sign up, often with help from the people there. A lot of people pointed out that's inconvenient. There were concerns there might be corruption or favoritism, so they decided to build a new statewide system that let people sign up online for housing anywhere in the state. Unfortunately, it didn't quite work out the way people hoped. One of the people I talked to is David Hedison. He's director of the Chelmsford Housing Authority, and he has very strong feelings about the new system.
How do I like the centralized waiting lists? I think it's the most horrible, horrible, inefficient program.
Yeah, he and other housing directors are really frustrated by all the vacancies.
What do these units look like? You know, what kind of condition are they in? And on average, how long are they sitting vacant?
Well, I know that there are more than 730 that have been sitting for at least a year. The vast majority have been sitting for more than 60 days, which is the usual deadline by which housing authorities are supposed to find a new tenant. You are also asking about the condition.
Yeah.
So it varies. So one of the reasons why units are sitting vacant is because they need repairs, they're in poor shape. There are other units over the years that have been torn down. Staffing is also really short at a lot of housing agencies. So even when there's minor stuff like painting or cleaning, a lot of agencies say they don't have the staff to do it quickly, so they can sit for months for that reason.
Hmm.
But I've seen other units, like ones in Agawam, that have been sitting for more than a year or two that are in pristine condition.
Hmm.
They're not luxury apartments. You're not going to see marble countertops, and you're not going to see built-in TVs, but they are clean, and they're empty, and they're ready to move in.
Hmm.
And the housing directors are just really frustrated that they don't have people living there.
What do local housing officials have to say about all of this? Because this is happening on their watch.
Yes. So, for instance, David Hedison, he's really frustrated by the situation.
You can't tell me it's our fault. We're using the system that state put in place. And there are people that need units, people that need to be housed yesterday.
Is there some sort of push to go back to the old system?
There are a lot of local officials who would very much like to do that. I talked to Ed Augustus, the Secretary of Housing. He said that he knows this is a problem, that there are all these empty units, and they're working to try to fix the system.
I think it's unacceptable. I think that we need to do everything we can to make sure that every single one of our precious public housing units is filled, and the amount of time between tenants is as short as is humanly possible.
They recently hired a vendor to take over some of the screening of applicants. One problem is there are just a huge number of people on the wait list, 184,000. Some of the rules are complicated. There's a lot of screening. Local housing authorities say they're overwhelmed, and a lot of the information in the computer system's inaccurate. So they're hoping this vendor will help speed up the process, but he's not sure when it will be fixed entirely.
Okay, because I was just about to ask you, what's their deadline?
He said he hopes they'll see improvement soon, but isn't sure when it will be completely fixed. And I should say, the governor was asked about this on our own Radio Boston. She also said that they're working on the problem and trying to address this.
And we've actually made some changes to address this wait list, this issue, and the time it takes when one unit becomes vacant and it is filled. And so we're pursuing a centralized screening system now. We've offered other improvements that should expedite and take care of that issue.
We're going to take a break, but we'll be right back.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. In a recent episode, Series CEO Mindy Luber says sustainability has reached a board level.
Look, if you're an agricultural company and you're not thinking about water risk, you're an apparel company, you're not thinking about risk to your cotton crop around the world. If you are a bank and not thinking about stranded assets of fossil fuels, you're not probably doing your due diligence.
Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the episode.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Todd, you just told me that there's 184,000 people on the wait list, right?
Yes.
There's nearly 2,300 units sitting vacant. What are the challenges finding people to fill at least some of these units?
There are a number of challenges. So they say a lot of the information is incorrect in the system. There's no upfront screening when people sign up, nor is there any help. The directions are complicated. A lot of the rules are complicated. So people often inadvertently sign up for priority when they don't need it, or the wrong number of bedrooms, or check the wrong box. And somebody needs to go through now and check all that and make sure it's correct. Another problem is a lot of the contact information is outdated. The system generally sends snail mail, U.S. mail. I don't get a lot of stuff other than junk mail through U.S. mail these days.
Yeah.
But that's what they rely on. And a lot of those people have moved since they signed up, or they're in a place where they don't reliably get mail, like a shelter or a hotel. And so a lot of those requests go unanswered. One housing authority director referred to it as chasing ghosts.
I would imagine there are some housing advocates helping people out and trying to connect some dots for people and help people get housed. What did they have to say about your reporting?
Absolutely. One of the people I talked to is Doris Romero. She works at the women's lunch place Day Shelter in Back Bay. And she was appalled to hear about all the vacancies.
Honestly, that's a travesty. Like, the Commonwealth should be ashamed. There's no excuse for that. Honestly, speechless here.
Romero's helped dozens of women apply for housing through the state website, and usually they hear nothing.
Yeah. Well, how about the people who need to fill these units? Did you talk to anybody who is currently trying to get into state public housing?
Yes, I talked to quite a few. One of the women I talked to, Deb Libby, lives in Worcester. She signed up nearly a year ago, has heard nothing, and she's facing eviction because her building sold, and she has to be out of her apartment by the end of the month, and she has no idea where she's going to go.
Find me something. I mean, I'm one person. I don't have kids. I don't have a dog. I don't smoke. I don't care what floor I'm on. I mean, I'm pretty easy fit.
And naturally, people like Deb Libby were just baffled and shocked to hear that there are all these empty units while they're waiting on the wait list for months or years and not hearing anything.
What are the solutions here? Are there any solutions?
So one of the solutions we talked about is problems with the state wait list and fixing those and addressing those. And as I mentioned, state housing officials say they're working on it. They're aware of the problem. They're hoping this marketing company can go through the applications, help clean up the data, and help speed things up. There are a bunch of housing directors that would just love them to go back to the old system where local housing authorities handled the wait lists themselves. But that is one of the key blocking points that needs to be addressed. Another is that housing authorities say that they need more funding.
And money, money, money.
And so many things come down to that, right? They lobbied to double the operating budget to $184 million, so 100% increase. The governor proposed 0% increase. The legislature wound up approving a 16% increase to $107 million. So they're getting more, but they say it falls short. Plus, on top of the operating budget they need to run things day to day, there is also all the repairs that have piled up years after years after years. The state estimates that there's a $3.2 billion backlog in repairs. Some advocates think it's more like $8 billion. Governor Healey says she is working on a bond measure that will include more money for housing, including public housing, but nobody expects it to equal $3.2 billion, let alone $8 billion, and clear up all of that backlog to fully repair and renovate all the existing units.
We heard from Governor Healey earlier, but have you heard anything from other state officials in response to your story?
Yes. The Speaker of the House, Ron Mariano, also addressed this. He said he's glad that the state is taking on the issue with the wait list and trying to improve it. He was more skeptical when it came to claims that local housing authorities need more money for staffing and repairs.
I'm sure that's true in some cases, and I'm sure it's not true in other cases. So it's like any other need in a city or town.
So it's unclear when lawmakers will approve more funding or how much.
Todd, thank you so much for coming through to The Common. Your first appearance, you knocked it out the park.
I hope it's not my last.
Oh, absolutely not. You're coming back. Thank you so much for talking to us about this story.
Thank you. I was really glad to be able to share it.
That's WBUR Investigations correspondent Todd Wallach. And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening to The Common. Folks, tell us what you think about this story, about this investigation. Hit us up on Instagram at WBURTheCommon or send us an email at thecommon@wbur.org. I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Mindy Luber, CEO of Ceres, a nonprofit dedicated to integrating sustainability into businesses. Here's host Kurt Nickisch.
Are the people who are working with ESG data now at companies, are they in a sustainability department? Does this just become part of general strategy or part of finance? How is that evolution happening with the actual people who are looking and working with the numbers?
So with both companies and investors, the cute idea of social responsibility that was at a manager level or something their foundations dealt with, that's gone. It is very clear based on data, based on facts, based on trends, that integrating sustainability into the core business is crucial. I mean, you cannot have a climate goal that says we're going to get to a net zero by 2040 if every department at the enterprise is not working on that. That's your manufacturing people. It's your supply chain people. So we find that there is often a sustainability team, but they're laying out a plan that involves almost every enterprise, every office, every part of a firm. And that's what we're seeing, because nobody can do the kind of cross-organizational work in one little group. It involves the entire team. It involves HR. Who are you hiring? Is DEI being implemented? How is that working? As it relates to where do you get your resources? Are there enough natural resources to make your product? What are the auto companies doing now that they've committed to by 2035, there will be no combustion engine vehicles coming off their assembly line for consumer vehicles? So sustainability is no longer a cute, a niche, a part of something off to the side. It is an integral part of almost every major enterprise and every major investor.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Marotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.